When you're strolling the aisles of a supermarket or a bottle shop, what makes you instinctively reach for a familiar brand? Why do you choose one company's product and ignore the other similar-looking products sitting side by side them on the shelf? Brand recognition and brand loyalty are central to a product's profitability. And over the last few days, there have been not one but two important court rulings around packaging and trademarks. One involves Humble Peanut Butter, which we're going to talk about shortly. The other involves premium wine. Andrew Williams is a wine law expert. He's a partner with Adelaide firm Finlayson's. Andrew, the federal court has just ordered a company called Rush Rich to pay the owners of the Penfolds premium wine brand $400,000. Andrew, you've been following this closely. You're not involved, but you've been following it closely. What is this litigation all about?
Hello, Damien. About a long-running challenge for Australian wine producers and exporters, both big and small, but about the risks that come in operating in an exciting new and expanding market like China, where a range of operators there from time to time will seek to exploit or, to put it bluntly, steal the intellectual property of established brands and producers, big and small, from the biggest operators down to the mum and dad boutique brands, some of which we see in straight counterfeiting, trying to mimic, for example, a bottle of Penfolds Grange with a fraudulent product. But here, this is a case where a business has attempted to trademark and use a brand or a get-up for a wine that is similar to, but not quite the same as, in this case, a Penfolds brand, and where the owners of that Penfolds brand have taken action to, in effect, say, this is too close to our brands and our trademarks. You're infringing those by using this get-up and this labelling, and seeking relief and court intervention, both in China, in the courts there, and then in parallel proceedings here, seeking to attack, if you like, not only those Chinese-based companies and entities, but also the Australian connection, where here we have seen, it appears from the face of the public record, Australian wine being sourced and packaged in this branding for export to the Chinese market.
So to clarify, this was copycat as opposed to counterfeit activity by this firm, Rush Rich. Their packaging and their labelling was very similar, designed to mislead, we could say, rather than to straight off counterfeit
yes.
a product.
In one sense, to put it broadly, to harness the reputation of Australian wine and the depth of history and quality of those Penfolds brands, for example, and associated with that is some very technical but quite important issues around the transliteration of Australian brands and trademarks in the English language into Chinese and Chinese characters. So the fight is not just about the word, for example, Penfolds or the get-up of the label, that is the design and that very distinctive bin series that Penfold has, but also the manner in which those English words are transliterated or converted, if you like, into Chinese characters and wording used in the Chinese market. So there was allegations that the Chinese characters used in relation to Rush Rich were too similar to the Ben Fu transliterated trademark of the Penfolds brand. So fights happening on a number of fronts, both in the, if you like, the English domain and also in the Chinese language domain.
The Chinese characters for Rush Rich look very similar to the Chinese characters for Penfolds' registered trademark Ben Fu, which translates as chasing prosperity. Wine law expert Andrew Williams, partner with Adelaide law firm Finlayson's, chasing that story for us. Coincidentally, last week, there was another big legal ruling involving packaging. Australian company Bega had a major win against US food giant Kraft. The federal court ruled that Bega has the exclusive right to sell peanut butter in a jar with a distinctive yellow lid and a distinctive yellow label. As lawyer Justine Munsey, who acts for Bega, explains, the Australian peanut butter market is very big business.
So it's about $110 million worth of sales in Australia, and Bega's peanut butter occupies about 60% of those sales.
Can you describe for me the packaging that was in dispute in this federal court litigation?
It is very recognisable, but it's the one with the bright yellow lid and the yellow label, and there's either a blue peanut butter shape for smooth peanut butter or a red peanut butter shape for crunchy peanut butter.
These different attributes that you've just been listing, they're collectively described as a product's trade dress. Is that right?
Yeah. The Americans tend to use the word trade dress, and that's why we used it in the litigation. Commonly, Australian lawyers refer to it as the get-up of the package. But yes, the trade dress is the term used in this judgment.
And this packaging, this trade dress, this get-up, it wasn't until 2013 associated for many years with Kraft peanut butter, wasn't it?
That's right. There was some fantastic evidence in the case about the history of Kraft peanut butter that went back to the 1930s, I think, and it had always been manufactured from the same factory in Port Melbourne in Victoria by Kraft.
And then in 2013, Kraft restructured and its Australian subsidiary was renamed Mondelez. Then in 2017, Mondelez sold its grocery businesses, peanut butter, Vegemite and other grocery brands, to Bega for a large amount of money, for $460 million. What happened at that point?
That's right. And those very famous brands and products came back into Australian hands because, of course, Bega Cheese is an Australian company. But at that point, the peanut butter had been branded as Kraft. But once Bega bought the brand, it replaced the Kraft brand with its Bega brand. But the trade dress that we were talking about before remained the same. It still had a yellow lid and a yellow label, and blue is smooth and red is crunchy.
Charlie's quality tested Australia's favourite peanut butter here in Port Melbourne for 18 years. Now that it's owned by Bega, let's see what's changed.
The same.
Same recipe, same great taste. Now Aussie owned by Bega.
Oh yeah, same all right.
So Bega is happily selling this product in this kind of familiar packaging, which it says it inherited as a result of this transaction. But Kraft was apoplectic. It took Bega to the federal court. What did it argue?
Well, Kraft was relying on that older deal back in 2012 when the Kraft Global Company had split up. And so this was something that Bega wasn't involved in because it was a long time before. But Kraft said, hang on, when the companies split into two and we took the name Kraft and the other side of the business took the name Mondelez, we said that you could still call your peanut butter Kraft and we want the Kraft brand back, which they got back. But Kraft said, but also when we split up all of our assets, we actually owned not only the Kraft name, but the trade dress. And now that Mondelez has sold the company, we are no longer permitting you to use it. And we're certainly not permitting Bega to use it. So the rightful owner of the trade dress is Kraft. Bega, you're not allowed to use it. And what's more, we Kraft are going to come on into the market. They're in IGA type stores. And we're going to use the old packaging that was always used and with the Kraft brand on it. So anybody who shops at IGA might have seen in the peanut butter aisle a yellow lid and yellow labelled peanut butter, but some is branded Kraft and some is branded Bega.
So Kraft went to the federal court to say, Bega, hands off, this belongs to us. And Bega said, no, we acquired the rights to use this packaging when we entered into a $460 million yes. contract to buy the business from Mondelez. What did the federal court say last week?
Well, the federal court had to look at that 2012 agreement and what happened then, whether Mondelez had the rights to sell to Bega the right to package the peanut butter in that trade dress. And the judge said that yes, it did. The analysis came down to really what comprises that trade dress and what sort of rights there are. And people will understand that there can be copyright and there can be trademarks and other rights when you're looking at things like a label on a product. And copyright can be sold separately and trademarks that are registered, like Kraft, can be sold separately. But the trade dress wasn't a registered trademark. It didn't have any separate legal status. It was, in fact, simply part of the goodwill of the business. It's what the Kraft and then the Mondelez business in Australia had always had and had developed over time. And the judge said that the law is clear that the only way that you transfer the things like parts of goodwill, such as that trade dress, is when you sell a business.
But why wouldn't you trademark these sorts of attributes? Because I understand you can trademark not just a brand name, but also sometimes logos more generally, or combinations of fonts and colours and words, and even sometimes shapes and colours. I think like Veuve Clicquot, the orange of the champagne brand, and maybe Cadbury Purple, the shade.
That's right.
You can do all of this stuff. So why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't a giant corporation secure these incredibly important assets?
Well, that's the, as it turns out, probably $60 million question.
$110 million question.
And one that a lot of marketers will be looking at, and I think a lot of people will be sent to look at their brand portfolios after this judgment to look and see what do we have in our packaging features that we haven't registered trademarks for, because we'd better be careful if we want to be able to buy and sell those rights, or we want to be sure that we have the rights to that material, we should have registered trademarks. But prior to that, I can't speak for what Kraft or what Mondelez were thinking, but I can hazard a guess and think that they regarded the Kraft brand as a sufficient and valuable enough, and that the attention was placed on that brand. There were other trademarks associated with the peanut butter, never oily, never dry, if you remember back in the 80s and the 90s.
You know what I really don't like? Peanut butter with oil on top. It's horrible and mucky.
Now, that is a trademark, and that trademark actually was assigned to Bega, so Bega owned that one.
Kraft peanut butter, smooth or crunchy, but never dry.
But there were other aspects of the packaging. There was a bear at one stage that was used on the packaging, and that was a registered trademark, and that was transferred back in 2012 to Kraft. When you have things as generalised as a yellow lid and a yellow label, it's harder to register that sort of material as a trademark. But what you can do is, if you can prove that that material has become distinctive of your company and of your products, that's when you will be able to register it. So often a business has to wait until they've been using it for a while and they've developed a reputation in those features. That's when they can say to our trademarks office, we've developed a reputation in this getup, and that's why we should have the right to register it.
Coming full circle and going back to that walk down the aisles, you often see packaging which you think, oh, that's that product, and then you, on close inspection, you realise it's not the familiar brand, it just looks damn similar. It seems that the competitors are often sailing very close to the wind here. They're doing what they can to kind of leverage off brand loyalty, brand recognition. Do you spend a lot of your time looking at these kinds of products?
I do, as a consumer and as a lawyer who knows what they're doing as a consumer, and also absolutely as a lawyer. We are often advising our clients on both sides of the fence, clients who are the rightful owners of very famous packaging designs, as well as clients who are interested in coming up with a new product, which acts perhaps, as we should say, an homage to a very famous
That's very kind.
Yes, and the real question is, when does an homage cross the line, and when it comes down to, usually, well, essentially what will confuse consumers.
And look, before I let you go, can you tell me very briefly about some of those recent cases where sometimes it's been held the homage or the tribute is okay and sometimes not okay?
There was a Maltesers case, a new brand on the market introduced malt balls, but introduced it in packaging which was largely red and black and had some red sort of bouncing balls on the packaging that looked similar to and certainly recalled images of Maltesers packaging. And Maltesers was very annoyed about that and took the company making malt balls to court. And that was a very interesting decision because the judge actually said that Maltesers essentially was a victim of its own success, that everybody knew the trademark and the brand name Maltesers, and if people wanted to buy Maltesers, they would look for Maltesers. Consumers aren't so silly as to fall for a product called malt balls, but people buying products in a hurry, they're the ones who are particularly vulnerable, and the courts do recognise that they are vulnerable, and that's where manufacturers and brand owners need to be careful to make sure that they can argue that consumers really can tell the difference because what they've done to their packaging to allow that to be the case.
Justine Munsey from Addison's Lawyers, who acted for Bega in its legal stash with Kraft. Register your intellectual property in a nutshell or a peanut casing. That seems to be the take-home message from this peanut butter legal battle.